Hey, everybody, this is Brett. Welcome back to School Sucks Podcast. Today is October 27th, and I am working as quickly as I can here to get this podcast edited, finished, uploaded, and out to you before I lose my electricity. This is what I'm anticipating is going to happen. We are supposed to get a hurricane named Sandy, and it's supposed to hit sometime within the next couple of days here. I'm thinking either tomorrow or Monday, and we are supposed to get clobbered by this thing as far as what I've heard so far on the East Coast, on the Sea Coast. I'm just a little bit inland, and I'm anticipating a power loss. One time when I lived in this area a few years ago, I lost power. We had this ice storm. I lost power for 11 days, and I didn't do the podcast then. So I couldn't call up PS&H and be like, listen, what is the deal with my power? I have to do a podcast. I need to be putting a show out every 7 days. My audience benefits from having a regular schedule and knowing when they can expect a new show. PS&H, Public Service of New Hampshire, our power company, they don't care about that. Or what are the chances that the person who answers the phone when I make this call even knows what a podcast is? I mean, they're all focused on substations and transmission lines. And even in the event that the person who answers the phone does know what a podcast is, they'd be like, well, you know, Brett, you know, podcasting wouldn't even be possible if it wasn't for what we did. Yes, I know. Thank you, PS&H. Thanks. So anyway, as you can tell from the title of the show, I'm going to have Mark Edge and Ian Freeman from Free Talk Live on today to discuss carrots and sticks. Incentive parenting. And the first thing I want to do is play you a clip from Free Talk Live. This is back on October 1st. This was the conversation that inspired me to extend an invite to Mark and Ian to participate in this roundtable on School Sucks Live. So I will play this for you, and then we'll get to work.
This is Free Talk Live. Dial in toll free. Bring up anything you want. 855-450-FREE. That's the SACL CAI toll-free line. 1-855-450-3733. You can join us on our website over at freetalklive.com. Enjoy all the features on the site. Once again, freetalklive.com. Joining you in the studio tonight, it's Ian.
And Julia.
And Mark.
We were talking about spanking here tonight, not just from the corporal punishment aspect of the school system, which apparently the school system in Amarillo, Texas, has decided to loosen its restrictions on spanking. Rather than get rid of the spanking, they've decided to make it so any administrator can administrate a spanking to any teenager at the high school, regardless of gender.
This will go well.
Oh, well, it's not like you can do anything about it. What are you going to do? Stop paying them? So you're stuck. I mean, if you don't like spanking, as I don't, I think it is violent, and I think that hitting people is unacceptable. It is not a way to solve problems. And I firmly object to having, I mean, I don't like the idea of government schools in the first place, but it's worse that these government schools are actually physically abusing their students.
I agree with you in that I don't think that spanking is good. I don't think that it's helpful. But as a human being, I can understand getting frustrated, losing your temper.
Sure.
I can't imagine how difficult and stressful and frustrating it can be to raise a child because there are things they just don't know and understand. And I'm sure there are times where you want to shoot yourself. You know, it's so frustrating. So I understand
it.
Them getting the better of you and you just losing your temper. I get it. But I feel like as a parent, I mean, that's just something before you have the kid that you need to, you know, you need to be able to calm yourself down. You need to be able to walk away from the situation, have some time to cool down, and then deal with the punishment. That's just my opinion. I don't have kids.
That's one of the reasons why I don't have kids, because
right.
I don't want to put myself in that position.
Well, if you, now I have a son, and we have chosen to try.
He's four.
He's four and a half, yeah. And we've chosen to try not to spank him. That was our decision early on. And the reason I did it wasn't because of what I believe about spanking necessarily. It's what I didn't know about spanking. I figured that spanking was a form of punishment where I could probably use other forms of punishment, achieve the same thing, and not have any of the dangers that have been linked. Linked is the key word here to spanking. I do not believe that spanking causes these things necessarily. And, I just decided not to do that. But we decided not to do that. But I also only have one child, and I know that it must be horrifying to have like a half a dozen of them conspiring against you and warring amongst themselves and doing what they do. and so I can understand why some parents resort to this. I just don't think that it's the best form of punishment. I think it should be used, if it's used, as a very last resort. And I also think that you're far better off trying. Fact is, timeouts work. You can say what you want about timeouts. There's lots of people.
Worked for me.
Lots of people in the Liberty community that will say that, you can't have incentives or punishments because they don't work and they create human beings that are, just don't understand.
Who says this?
School Sucks, Brett Vanaut, Stephanie.
He says incentives don't work?
Yes.
Why would that be? I mean, let's go away from spanking for a moment here, but what?
I don't know.
I can tell you they work great with me. My parents did the star chart thing where, if I did good, I can't defend his position.
I'd
get stars.
Because I don't understand it.
I'm asking the universe, okay? So if anybody's out there who wants to explain this to me, please feel free to call in at 855-450-FREE. What is the reasoning here? Incentives. Life is about incentives. Humans are exceptionally motivated by incentives.
Well, I think that little kids don't always have the ability to really think about consequences and things long term. So I think it's easy for a little kid
Maybe little kids.
I think it's easy for a kid to be stubborn and just say, like, no, I don't care about that, and not really consider whether or not they would want it and perhaps change their mind later.
But as soon as a child is old enough to care about something, then it'll work, right? Like, Jack likes certain things, right? At age 4.5. So, like, at what age do you think would the incentives process have started to work with Jack?
It started working already. I mean, I would say that...
I know. So at what age do you think it would have
certainly
started?
At 4, maybe a little earlier, depending. Mm-hmm. We were working with stickers with him, for different things. They had some level of incentive. But to some extent, he's going to do what he wants, too.
Yeah.
What I decided I wanted to use incentives for were behavior that I did not consider to necessarily be... for new behavior that we wanted to... sort of establish, and secondarily for behavior that I wouldn't necessarily consider to be his obligation. For instance,
so if he goes above and beyond the call of duty,
right? So he wants these Marvel superhero plastic figure things, mm-hmm. And they're at the little dollar store. They're cheap across the street at the convenience store. They're $2. And so I'm like, okay, well, you're going to have to go outside and help Daddy pick up sticks. We've had a bunch of trees taken down, mm-hmm. and over the years. And it's just there's a section of the yard that's just covered in sticks and bark and things, and I'm trying to clean it up, but it takes forever. A rake isn't going to do it. There's no piece of machinery that's going to do it. You just got to pick it up.
Got to do it by hand.
And so I tell him that he can have, he can help me with these, and we fill up these boxes. Boxes make it easier because we burn the stuff. We just put it right in the wood stove, and everything burns at once rather than trying to do a wheelbarrow into the wheelbarrow, then out of the wheelbarrow, and all that stuff. So fill up these boxes. And I'll give you 75 cents for every box, or I think it was 50. I'm not entirely sure how I worked it out. I think I started at 50 and then whatever. But I helped him with it, and I did my own box at the same time.
That's slave labor. You should be paying that boy a living wage.
He's getting his living wage. He's doing quite well, frankly.
Yeah.
But
that seems pretty good, actually, 50 cents a box.
Then what we do is we give him the money. And I show him how to fold it and where to put it and to put it in his pocket. Mm-hmm. And then we go to the store. I drive him there. He picks out the one he wants.
Oh, does he get to buy it all by himself, too? Well,
and then we go up and he hands it to the people. He hands the money to the people at the cash register. I'm not going to teach him how to, I'm not going to do it for him. I'm going to show him how to do it.
That's great.
And so that's the process that we went through.
All right. So I'll start by saying this. Bit of a miscalculation on my part as far as how much I thought we could cover in the time frame that we had. Originally, I asked Mark and Ian to come on the show for maybe 2 or 3 segments, and thought that was enough time to get through everything that I wanted to talk about. They wound up staying the whole show, and we didn't even come close. The most important question to address, do incentives work? But I was also hoping that the argument could evolve beyond this efficiency, practicality argument. This is good because it works, right? So that being said, let's lay some groundwork. We'll start today with a clip from an interview with Alfie Cohen. I will put a link to this entire interview in the show notes for this episode. But here he discusses the productivity and the counterproductivity of this very common punishment and reward model for parenting and education.
Alfie, welcome to Secrets of Happy Parents. I'm so glad you could join us.
Nice to be here.
Well, I have been following you in the news again lately, taking some heat for your willingness to challenge conventional parenting approaches. Tell us, what's wrong with our usual parenting practices?
Well, in a nutshell, they tend to be focused more on how to get short-term compliance, answering the question, how do I get my kid to do what I want him to do, rather than on our long-term goals for the kind of people we hope our children will grow into. And as a result of the focus on short-term obedience, we tend to use variations of bribes and threats, rewards and punishments to control kids, when it turns out that not only does that not work in the short and medium term, but it makes it less likely that kids will grow into caring, compassionate, happy, ethical, responsible people.
Hmm, so you're saying that it's actually counterproductive to use the approaches that most parents today use in Western culture?
That's right. It's not just ineffective, it's counterproductive. So, for example, we find that kids who have punitive consequences enforced, you do this or here's how I'm going to make you suffer, with timeouts and grounding and loss of privileges and scoldings and spankings, all of this gets kids to be more self-centered. So they're now asking the question, you know, what do I have to do and what happens to me if I don't do it? Rather than focusing on why it might make sense to do this rather than that. Not to mention the fact that our relationships with kids, which is the most important feature of parenting, our relationships become warped and strained. And every time parents lay out consequences, here's what you have to do or else, kids tend to be about as happy to see us coming as we would be to see a police car in our rear view mirror. The flip side of this, rewards, is where we're saying to kids, in effect, if you do this, I will give you that, where we dangle goodies in front of them, stickers, gold stars, desserts, or even sometimes just a verbal goodie like, good job. And now kids come to see us as goodie dispensers on legs, not as caring allies. Rewards and punishments are not opposites. They're two sides of the same coin. But that coin doesn't buy very much, and it actually does a fair amount of damage.
So I thought that we were supposed to reward the positive behavior we see in our kids and, give them positive attention when they do something we like. Is there any place where that's appropriate? Tell us about acknowledging a child versus praise.
Well, let me take the first part of the question.
Mm-hmm.
What you have described has been framed by one researcher as sugar-coated control.
Mm.
What kids need from us, in addition to guidance and support and feedback, what they most need from us is not just love, but unconditional love. They need to know that even when they screw up or fall short, we still care about them. In other words, that they are loved for who they are, not for what they do. The most destructive thing you can do with a child with respect to the love issue is to make the love something they have to earn. Now, in that context, we can understand love withdrawal techniques like time out, which feels to the child like the care is being strategically withdrawn until the child obeys, does whatever we want. And conversely, what you just described, positive reinforcement, is conditional love. It's not just different from what kids need, it's the opposite. It's our saying to children, only when you impress me, only when you're well behaved, only when you jump through my hoops and do what I want, will I say, good job, I really like the way you... Only then do we give them the high fives and the big smiles and the hugs. And that's poison. Most parents who do this aren't doing it to be destructive of children or to be conditional parents. They're doing it because they have never been invited, in most cases, to reflect on how children need that unconditional support. Again, that's not to say we don't intervene when they do something wrong or that we don't express enthusiasm when we're pleased with them. But if they come to see our reaction as the point, then they're not interested so much in reading a book, in drawing a picture, in sharing and helping someone else for its own sake. Now those activities are just a means to an end, and the goal is to get our approval. So kids get hooked on the praise. That's why, in answer to the last part of your question, we have to think hard not just about the way we're expressing enthusiasm and support. We have to think about our goals, because if the objective in acknowledging a child is to make the kid do it again, in crude terms, to reinforce the behavior as if we were training a puppy, then it doesn't matter what words we use. The kid understands at some level he or she is being manipulated, and that is not good for our relationship or the child's growth.
And now let's jump back to the evolving of the discussion that I spoke about earlier. We've talked a lot in recent months about the philosophical corruption of our modern society through philosophies like German idealism and all of the collectivism and irrationality that it brought. In fact, if you haven't heard the episode 167, Logic Saves Lives, The Stolen Concept, we talk about it quite a bit in that show, but it's also discussed in the American Way series as well. But there's other infections in mainstream thinking, and two philosophies that come to mind, pragmatism and utilitarianism. Utilitarianism was Jeremy Bentham, and pragmatism is often credited to John Stuart Mill. So utilitarianism is the idea of the greatest happiness for the greatest number, and pragmatism is the idea that doing what works is paramount as far as how a course of action should be evaluated. Well, you can see that these two ideas are just endlessly pervertible and have really seeped into a lot of thinking. People don't even realize the influence of those two schools of thought. So when we're talking about children and young adults, where has pragmatism led? Right? Pragmatism, which goes so hand in hand with myopia. Drugs, Ritalin, Adderall, especially if you're only concerned about short term, especially in the school setting, well, these kids are only here for 6 years, 4 years, so why would we even be concerned? I mean, this might not be a conscious thought, but there's probably little concern about what happens after that. We're talking about the efficiency of behavior management in that setting. So I would like to get away from these sort of simplistic, does this work or not type arguments. The big catch with pragmatism, let's do what will work to solve this problem. Well, who defines the problems? You think about that in the school setting. The problem is that Johnny or Sally does not behave in accordance with the rules of this school. So there are so many unexamined premises, so many important considerations about Johnny and Sally that are left out of the equation as well. Now, don't get me wrong. There's nothing wrong with, in its simplest form, seeking efficient and practical solutions to a problem. But the problem with the argument from efficiency or the argument from effect is, are you working on your own problem? Or are you working and thinking on a problem that somebody else created for you? Because in our current society, government defines the problem. We got this problem called terrorism. So here's some practical solutions that we have for that. And believe me, I think those solutions were formulated before the problem of terrorism was introduced to us. But ooh, that's another series of shows right there. So let's skip over that. And moving beyond the practical or efficiency-based arguments, one of the most influential thinkers in my development was Stefan Molyneux, who introduced to me, anyway, the argument for morality very, very early in his podcast series on Free Domain Radio. Now, the argument for morality allows us to move beyond these go-nowhere arguments from effect of, I have statistics and anecdotes, and let's just throw different statistics and anecdotes at each other. Because if you think about the typical left-right political paradigm, people go to media sources where the volume is going to be turned way up on things that help them continue believing what they already believed, while the volume is going to be turned way down on anything that is contradictory. And aside from the media, people have their own internal editors running that are going to do that exact same thing. So when we have the does this work type arguments with people It's basically saying, let's go cherry picking together, but we'll start in different places and then we'll just yell at each other from across the cherry tree orchard. That's not really a great metaphor, but I'm leaving it in. So the argument for morality, you know, has people putting their cards on the table. And the question that Steph asked in a great speech that he gave at Liberty Forum a few years back was, do you support the use of force against me? I think if you go into YouTube and you search for the against me argument, you can see this. This is very confronting, right? But if you start an argument and allow it to heat up and gain negative momentum through the first approach, if somebody is already kind of emotionally unstable and you throw this at them, they might not be able to react appropriately and logically to that question. There's a lot at stake in the argument for morality. But here in this case, when it comes to the treatment and educational experience of a child, there's a lot more at stake outside of the conversation. There's a lot, the stakes are high emotionally within that conversation, but the stakes are even higher outside of that conversation because there's a child involved. The treatment of a child is what brought us to this disagreement. So if the other person, especially in a state of heightened emotion, which means less rationality, perceives my approach as one of attack and judgment, I could potentially drive somebody away that I might have had the ability with a more careful approach. I might have had the ability to make a connection there that would lead to a more positive outcome for that child. But if I say, listen, the manipulation of another human being's behavior is entirely immoral. Spanking is a violation of the non-aggression principle that is immoral. Now, I believe that people do care about what is right and what is wrong and have a lot of emotional investment in, you know, what I do, what I support, who I vote for is on the side of good. And one of the challenges with the argument for morality is that you're asking people to accept within the time frame, maybe a very narrow time frame of one conversation, that what you do, what you support, what you allow is essentially morally wrong. And that's tough stuff, right? Those conversations are quickly filled with hostility, emotion, defensiveness, blame, the perception of attack, and then obviously the consequence of that is counterattack. And I've walked away from many conversations like this feeling bad. And I talked to Steph about this over a year ago. And he said to me, you know, you really better understand why you want to do this, what you're hoping to achieve through these kinds of conversations, and maybe you should take a break. And this was, I think this was more at that time directed towards family. But not everybody can do this and walk away emotionally unscathed. There's a lot of preparation that needs to go into being able to do this. And I will admit that when I first understood my philosophy makes sense, I can move forward confidently and communicate these ideas to other people. But there's a lot of behind the scenes and you know, layers down work that needs to go into that as well. And really, frankly, I started doing it before I think I was emotionally equipped to deal with the fallout of that. And I think that's, you know, an honest conversation that you need to have with yourself. Steph helped me have it with myself through a conversation that he had with me. That being said, what I was hoping that we could do in this show is get more into a nonviolent communication approach for this argument. And we could talk about the needs of the parent and the needs of the child and trying to create a win-win situation. Because what was missing for me in so many of the conversations that I had had over time was a focus on the meta talk. What is underneath? What is one layer or two layers or three layers underneath this outward interaction that we are having? So we didn't get to develop that fully, but we will have more opportunities to explore that in the future. And we certainly will, because I think it's very, very important. On that note, in one part of the show, Mark raises what I think is a very valid question of, if these are things that I should not be doing, what should I do? And I wanted to reframe that question by first, you know, drilling down a little bit and asking some questions about, are we going to remain in this way of thinking Very common, very traditional, very long-lasting way of thinking about the parent-child relationship as a domination relationship. Or can we move in this conversation towards understanding it more as a partnership? Now, that's not to say that the parent-child relationship is not unique and is not in many ways very different, as we're going to talk about in just a minute, from relationships that we have in our adult-to-adult lives. So I'm asking questions about intentions, judgments, motivation, origins of feelings, and I didn't get to get through all of them, but I am going to put a link to these questions in the show notes so you can look at the full list for yourself. And of course, like I said, it will come up on the show in the future on a subject very, very similar to this. Now, I don't want to do too much commentary on this discussion without Mark and Ian here to answer for themselves, but these are things that I've been thinking about for a while, and we're not really specific to that conversation. And this was touched on in this discussion, but this is something that I've heard a lot of people say, even a lot of liberty-minded people say. This often comes up as so-and-so, the child, needs to understand how the real world works. Mark will say one time, there's the right answer, and then the real answer. Well, you know, I think about everything that liberty-minded people are trying to do, whether you're talking about, you know, me at School Sucks, or Mark and Ian at Free Talk Live. We're trying to kind of bridge that gap between real answers and right answers. And I don't think that when it comes to talking about how children should be raised, how children should be treated, what the educational experience of a young person should be, that the primary directive should be they need to understand how the real world works. The real world is the thing we're trying to change. So if the most important outcome is so-and-so, the child, will understand how the real world works, I got a great place that you can send them. It's called public school. They will learn so much that will prepare them for the real world. They'll learn about superficial relationships. They'll learn about how to drag themselves through unwanted obligations. They'll learn how to have no freedom. They'll learn how to have no autonomy. They'll learn how to happily accept the watchful eye of arbitrary authority while surrendering their minds to people who are often less intelligent than they are. Oh, and let's not forget the all-important sacrificing of one's own needs, desires, goals, and autonomy for the sake of pleasing other people. Public school. There is one in your town if that is your primary goal. Preparation for the real world as it exists today. A real world that was built on a very solid foundation. Centuries of mistreatment and miseducation and lack of consideration for young people. This, in our discussion, came up when we were talking about timeout. The question of timeout as a withdrawal of affection from the parent. In the adult world, if you're a shithead, yes, people will withdraw their affection and attention from you. But that is not the relationship that a parent should strive to have with their own child. In my opinion, in my humble opinion, because I'm not a parent. I mean, I can only speak from the years of experience that I had working with kids who came from very troubled and unstable backgrounds. I would say prepare your child for the world in which you would like to live, a world that is rational. This goes back to question one that we talked about in the last show, Breaking Free. Did your parents' manner of dealing with you give you the impression that the world was rational, predictable, intelligible, or a world that was bewildering, contradictory, incomprehensible, and unknowable? Because a stable and rational, predictable world from parents where love is unconditional. Love isn't something that you're on the fence about, you know, based on the child's behavior. That kind of world provided for the parents leads the child to believe that his or her mind is a useful and practical tool for making sense of what goes on around them. Keep promises. Avoid arbitrary commands. I would think that that's the best thing that you could do to prepare a child for the harsh realities of the real world. I would want to make sure that they were emotionally and intellectually equipped to move through that world confidently and purposefully. But there's all of this talk about natural consequences and logical consequences. Those are euphemisms for parent-manufactured punishments a lot of the time. And that's something that, gosh, I would like to see people steer away from. And just a couple quick announcements about the actual show before we start here, the live show from October 25th. For some reason, my mic and Corey's mic are a little blown out, like blown out the bottom, the bass sounds. I don't know why that happened. I worked on it the best I could. I'll make sure it doesn't happen in the future. Also, you're going to hear pretty much the whole show, except obviously the commercials and the transitions in and out of each segment. I cut all that stuff out. But in the introduction, the first segment, where we basically just get warmed up and we really don't get into the topic too much beyond an introduction, you'll hear me say that during the breaks, which will appear in the videos when they go on YouTube, we're going to do other things to entertain the people who watch those videos. So we play this game called Fact or Crap. But then you'd hear me mention that, and you wouldn't hear it in the show because all the breaks are cut out of the podcast. So I just stuck that in at the end. It's really not essential listening, but if you don't have time for the video, you can hear all our break chatter if you want to at the very end of the podcast today. All right, that's it. Here's the show with Mark and Ian. Thank you so much for listening, and take care. Hey, everybody, welcome back to School Sucks Live. This is Brett, and in the studio with me tonight, we have Osborne.
Hey, guys, I missed you.
Yeah, it's been a while, and Corey.
Hey. Hey, guys, you missed me.
We missed you, too. I'm glad you're back. I'm glad we're back on LRN live show. We did one last week, Wes and I. We actually did a twofer.
Wow.
In 2 hours, we hammered out two pretty good shows.
Wow. It takes us 2 hours just to do one show.
I know.
And it's not even pretty good.
Wes is very efficient. I guess. So tonight, we're going to have a couple of other pretty influential voices as far as like my development as a thinker to moving towards where I am today. I would credit it as one of the three most influential podcasts for me. Excellent. And tonight, I think I'm going to use some of the stuff that I learned from the other two.
Right.
To argue against these two guys. So, Free Talk Live is what I'm talking about.
Yes.
Ian and Mark are going to join us.
I have heard of these people.
Yeah. Yeah. I started listening to Free Talk Live in about 2006 and been off and on, been an amper, something I definitely recommend people do, amp the show, because Free Talk Live is a great way for people to slowly be introduced to these ideas.
Right.
You know, it doesn't have the heaviness of like a free domain radio or something like that, which is another one of what I would credit as the more influential podcasts.
Very
and the other one was Complete Liberty podcast, Wes Bertrand's show. So those were my big three.
Mm-hmm.
And they're going to come on tonight, and we're probably going to do a little disagreeing.
I disagree with that. I think once we get into it, we're going to find out that we completely agree.
You think so?
I think so.
Even on the whole incentives thing?
I think so once we actually talk about it.
Yeah, incentive parenting.
I think their idea of incentives is a slightly different thing than what we think of.
Yeah.
Right.
We've tried to balance their studio with our studio. Mark and Ian are in Keene in the Free Talk Live studio.
Uh-huh.
Mark is a parent. Ian is not. Now, here in Manchester, I am not a parent. You are not a parent.
I am not a parent.
Osborne is.
Is.
Has two children. And
lucky for them.
Yeah. You know, a lot of people become parents for selfish reasons, right? But in your case, you said, my two kids are going to be so lucky to have me as a dad.
Yeah, I think it was more like, I thought I pulled out.
Oh, okay. So there's less planning than I thought. So we are going to talk about punishments and rewards.
Right.
And we're going to do that using the work of Alfie Cohen, who wrote the book Punished by Rewards 20 years ago. And it's something that I've used several times in the show before. The carrots and the sticks.
Right.
And obviously, most of my opinions, what I've come to believe and understand about this has been informed through my own experience in schooling, but that was a lot of time with a lot of different kids. And in that setting, I can say conclusively that those methods do not work
and are not okay. And we're going to get into that in more detail on the show.
Well, I can mostly relate to this topic, not as someone with children. Most of my experience with this whole punishment rewards paradigm has to do with being an employee of people and having them try to control me with incentives and punishments, and how it doesn't work when you're an adult either. I mean, it works. I mean, the big problem is you have to really make sure when you discuss this with someone that you're using the same definition of both what an incentive is versus what a punishment is, and what you mean by it works.
Exactly. And that's one of the first things that I want to clarify with them tonight is let's get our terms straight.
Right.
Right. Because works is very subjective, and incentives can mean a lot of different things in a lot of different settings. So I think that's very important. I think we've got all the bases covered. You and I used to be children.
Right.
Osborne is the parent of children. You are talking about your experience as an employee. Osborne is an employer. Mm. Right. This is the most we've ever had on the show. It's going to be five people.
It's going to be five crazy.
Entire people. My goal is 10.
10.
10 people on the show at once. Everybody will have their own camera as well.
Nice.
It'll be like Leo Laporte, you know, just cutting from camera to camera to camera to camera.
If we could keep it down to 9 people, then we could have everybody have their own camera, and it would look like the opening credits of the Brady Bunch.
We could also do like a Hollywood Squares kind of thing.
Yeah. And whoever gets to be the center square, they're like the guest of honor in center square.
That reminds me, we're talking about...
We need to get Rip Torn in here, and...
He can't be alive anymore. Is he the confetti guy?
Yeah.
I thought, no.
Wait. Who am I? What's this guy? What's the guy's name, the confetti guy?
Could they both be named Rip Torn?
No, I think they're both named Rip, though.
Rip?
There's a Rip Taylor?
Rip Taylor.
That's the guy I'm thinking
Rip
of.
Torn is the guy from Men in Black, and he also played Tom Green's dad in Freddy Got Fingered.
Right, and he was the bad guy in Mark Singer's masterpiece, The Beastmaster.
After the first segment, we do 7 segments of talk that is pretty focused on education. We encourage you to stick with us after midnight when we do something called the After School Sucks Special. That's Ustream only. You can participate in the show at just about any point. I might ask people to hold off on calls once we move to the second segment and bring Ian and Mark into the conversation. But if you want to write the number down, if you're just listening to us, it's 843-JOIN-SSP. You can Skype in School Sucks Live. And in the second hour, I think this is going to be a thought-provoking discussion, so you have things that you want to add at that point.
Is there like a chat room or something the listener can like maybe type a question?
Yeah, absolutely. Even if you're just listening to us on LRN, like say your computer is slow and you can't stream our video, then you can still go to schoolsucksproject.com/live and you can participate in a chat there. Now, even though this is something that I usually wouldn't talk about on the show, we just burned the first segment anyway. We're just getting warmed up.
The pop culture references out of my system.
Exactly. So one of the new things that we're doing, because we are doing video recordings of the show as we do video broadcasts of the show, and then I put those on YouTube. Well, I've been doing a recording segment by segment, which is annoying for me. It's annoying for people to have to, you know, flip through a playlist on YouTube. Mm. So now we're just doing hour one, hour two, and I'm putting the whole show up like that with no editing. Because that's a huge, like putting something into Sony Vegas and cutting out the commercials. Huge project, huge files, long upload times. So I'm just going to take it from Ustream and transfer it to YouTube. But that means the commercials are going to be in there. So that means it's our responsibility to entertain you during the commercials. Tonight, we're going to do a little game.
Right.
During the commercial break.
This is an exciting game.
I love games.
It's called Fact or Crap.
Ooh.
Now,
what are the rules of this game?
Well, very simple. It's actually has a real world application too, because there's a lot of crap.
Yeah, this will help you sharpen your skills at separating facts from crap.
I'm going to read something. It's going to sound like it could be true, or like it's totally ridiculous.
Right.
And you have to decide: is it a fact or is it crap? That's the game we're going to play. So, if you want to get into our chat, schoolsucksproject.com/live, I will read the question and I'll give everybody a minute to decide, is this fact or is this crap?
Right.
No prizes tonight, but maybe in the future we'll have prizes. Mark and Ian, are you guys there?
Howdy.
Yep.
Hey, it's great to have you on. Thank you so much for taking the extra time. I know you just did your show for 3 hours. So
absolutely.
I thought I could start by playing a clip of the comment that made me want to have you guys on for this discussion. And Mark, thanks for bringing it to my attention. This is from Free Talk Live, October 1st.
My concern was that you weren't there to defend yourself or your position, so I wanted to be as close to that as I could.
And I just want to tell everybody, wait till you hear Mark's impression of me. It is so spot on. Okay. So here's the clip. It's going to run just a little bit over a minute. We might play more of it later in the show, but we'll start with this for now so you know what we're talking about.
You know, fact is, timeouts work. You can say what you want about timeouts. There's lots of people.
Worked for me.
Lots of people in the Liberty community that will say that, you can't have incentives or punishments because they don't work and they create human beings that are, just don't understand.
Who says this?
School Sucks, Brett Vonnegut, Stephanie.
He says incentives don't work?
Yes.
Why would that be? I mean, that's just, let's go away from spanking for a moment here, but what?
I don't know.
I can tell you they work great with me. My parents did the star chart thing where, if I did good, I can't defend his position.
I
get stars.
Because I don't understand it.
I'm asking the universe, okay? So if anybody's out there who wants to explain this to me, please feel free to call in at 855-450-FREE. What is the reasoning here? Incentives. Life is about incentives. Humans are exceptionally motivated by incentives.
Okay. Thought it was a very interesting discussion, but I think we need to start by clarifying a couple words. Corey, you brought this up in segment one. There's two words that need to be defined, and the first one is incentives, and the second one is work. So, Mark, if you want to take that. First of all, incentives, and then what does it mean for them to work?
For incentives to work. Okay.
Yeah.
So incentives are things that, goods, services, things that you get in exchange for doing other things. Usually they're
set up. It
doesn't
have to be tangible. It can be a psychic incentive, right?
It's
a good feeling.
Well, okay. So, an incentive.
Mommy loves me.
An incentive isn't a good feeling because I can't say, you're going to feel good once you do this. You're going to only be able to provide yourself with a good feeling. So it may be this intangible incentive that you go for, but I think we're talking about, in this instance, incentives that parents provide to children, right?
Okay. Well, because the reason why I ask, and I wanted some clarification on what you thought incentives were, is you went on to tell this story about your son that I thought was a wonderful story and was very, very different from what I usually think about. Now, I said also, most of my experience on this subject is informed from the time that I spent working with kids in education. I said in the first segment that I'm not a parent. We do have Osborne here who is a parent, but
I'm also not a parent.
And Ian is not a parent. Corey is not a parent. You tell a story about Jack, and you can correct me if I'm summing it up wrong, but he wanted to get something. And it seemed like what you were doing was, Mark, modeling, well, when I need stuff, this is the process that I go through. You gave him a way to earn money. He earned money. You took him to the store. And he was able to make a purchase with money that he earned, right?
Yep.
Okay, well, I mean, I think that there's a big difference between modeling positive, life-enriching behavior for somebody, or saying, here's what I do, let me show you what I do. Nathaniel Brandon, the psychologist who did a lot of work on childhood and parenting, said parents' most potent teaching tool is through example. So that was totally different of what I think about from school, which is all, carrots right. and sticks and through what my understanding of incentives is, you're kind of ripping the intrinsic motivation to do stuff out of people by saying, do this because you get a thing, right? So then the next time they're going to do it, it's like, well, where's the thing? I only did it for the thing. Parents want this behavior to become habitual, but it becomes linked to doing it to get a thing.
Right. But there's also the way that differs from the incentives that we're talking about when we say incentives don't work is that he had a goal to reach.
Sure.
I'm sorry, what was your son's name?
His name's Jack.
Jack. Jack had a goal that he wanted to reach. So he had his own motivation to gain something. And, teaching him that sometimes you have to do something you're not so excited about doing in order to be able to do something you can, that's not exactly, he created his own incentive there. And the kind of incentives that we're talking about that we, that the claim is that they don't work is these arbitrary incentives to get someone to do something they wouldn't otherwise have any interest in doing.
Right. Like, what does a cupcake have to do with a spelling test? That kind of a question.
Okay.
So I thought your story was great, and I thought that was an example of the kind of thing that I would generally encourage people to do. So the other word was work. What does it mean for something to work? Does it work is also kind of subjective. Does it work for the kid? Does it work for the parent? You heard Ian say in that clip, it worked for me. So what do we mean by work?
Ah, okay. So I was going to say, I don't know how I use the term work in that particular instance, but I like any parent, I would hope any parent, want to do the very best thing for my son. And, I've been thinking about this because I knew this was happening, and I've distilled the problem, I think, for I'm just going to call people in my shoes. I'm not going to say necessarily me, although, to some extent this is true for me, but sort of people in my shoes. A, I haven't read Alfie Cohen's, Killed by Incentives or something?
Whoa, jeez, Mark. punished by rewards.
All right, whatever.
That's pretty extreme.
So I haven't read his book and am not likely to do it. I mean, I have a limited amount of time in my life and I have a lot of books stacked up, and you know what? It just doesn't seem like it's going to make the final cut. And I'm interested in what the answer is to, you know, like what does this book say? But I'm not interested in spending the hours it's going to take to get through it. And I've never heard anybody explain it to me in a way that I found, you know, sort of understandable and acceptable. Secondarily, there's the sort of superior versus inferior thought process that we, the parents, are, you know, are real happy about you, the non-parents, thinking about these subjects. But why don't you keep your little ideas to yourself? Like, this is often the way parents tend to feel because we're in a frustrating position, you know?
Sure. And Mark, you said you'd never seen anything in this book or never heard anything, nothing had ever been related to you from Cohen's philosophy that you found particularly convincing.
Right. And, you know, I've heard people talk about it, but, you know, as you can imagine, the amateurs, you know, sort of, you know, often it's the zealots, the recently converted, the most zealotous. And so, you know, people that cannot defend a position are often the ones that try hardest to convince you of it.
Oh, like it's new and exciting.
Yeah.
Sure. Okay.
There's a reason that not every one of those people has written a book of their own.
Yeah, that's true. All right. So, I mean, it's just some things to preview the whole does it work? Does it work for who? I think is an important question, because punishments and rewards always work for the authorities. And I think that that's a paradigm that, you know, all of us, I think, are involved in different ways in trying to affect some positive change in the world. And I worry that this system of incentives and disincentives, carrots and sticks, feeds into the status quo of the adult world as it's been for so long. The other question I would have is, you know, how long? I mean, if we're just dealing with the pragmatic, the practical approach of this, are they long-term solutions? Mm. And of course, this also, does it work, is also incredibly subjective, because we've all heard the person say, my dad beat the crap out of me and I turned out fine.
I have heard that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Now,
I turned out fine.
Right.
Except that I argue using violent punishment on children. Except for that part, I turned out fine.
Oh, yeah. As my uncle used to say, when I was a kid growing up in the 50s, you know, all the things they forced us to do and threatening us with wooden spoons, I think spanking's fine because I was spanked and I turned out fine. Except here where you sit and fantasize about beating children that you don't have for reasons that you don't even know. Right? Except for that, you're fine. So the working part of it is like really the first of three ways that you can have this discussion. Three different routes to go with this. And the first one we've already kind of covered. The argument from effect, the pragmatic, the practical argument. Does this work or not? That usually is not going to settle anything, I think. The second one is the moral argument. I don't think that works here. And then There's a third way, right? So I don't think the first way works. I don't think the second way ultimately works. And the third way is something that a lot of people are probably not going to like.
Well, if I could jump in here,
sure.
I mean,
he's building freaking suspense.
I don't know why. I don't have a kid, so I don't know how much I can really add to this conversation, but I was the one who said it worked for me, right?
Sure.
That was my line.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I don't remember very well beyond too long ago, but I do remember the star chart, and I do remember that there was some kind of an incentive. I don't remember what, you know, was the pot of gold at the end of the rainbow, or if it was even anything that great. I mean, my parents were not exactly spoiling me at any point. But I do remember the star chart, and I remember when I said it works, I meant it was a motivation to me to get those stars. And maybe it was just to make my parents happy and to get a star. And maybe, you know, it was something simple like, you know, an ice cream after a whole week or something like that. And honestly, I don't remember what it was, but knowing my parents, it wasn't anything lavish. It worked for me in that it motivated me, and that's what I meant when I said it worked.
Can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
Did you ever not get? Did you ever
ask another one?
Did you ever not get enough stars to get the thing you wanted?
I couldn't tell you. I really couldn't tell you. Remember it being a positive influence on me, and I think that. I don't think my parents were so much bribing, and I don't think that there wasn't a moral explanation to go along with it. Like, you know, you're good because it's good. You know, good things happen when you're good to people, when you are doing good things for other folks. But you know, here's this extra incentive. You know, we'll throw this in as a bonus. And all those things are true. I mean, if you are good to people and you do the right thing, generally life rewards you.
Sure. Yeah. So that was another thing that you said in your statement that I thought was interesting. You said something like the world is run by incentives, right? People
sure.
are.
I think it is.
Okay. Well, I would ask, how happy and healthy generally is that world that we're talking about?
I operate for incentives, and they make me happy.
Okay. So but this, I mean, go ahead.
I'm happy because I choose it.
It's a lot easier for me to choose not to sell ads on the radio, because there's a lot of work in selling ads on the radio. This is what I do for a living. So my incentive is the money that allows me to live the life I want to live.
I also incentivized you with the majority of the money that we get in as well, because I knew incentives were important.
And you don't, you live like a monk.
Well, I wanted to make sure that you were incentivized to stay with me and not go work for some magazine or somebody else.
I think the incentive was to come with you as opposed to stay with you.
Okay, well, whatever. You were working for something, someone else at that point, and I wanted to make sure you were working for Free Talk Live.
But you guys,
I gave you the appropriate incentives.
There was a foundation, like when you, I know Free Talk Live has evolved over time, and it was more of like what maybe would be described like more of hot talk at the beginning than what it is today. Is that fair to say? I mean, I only started listening like five or six years
ago. We were talking about a smoking ban right out the gate the first night of the show.
All right. So
it's hard to remember, but certainly more hot talky.
Yeah, but there was a foundation there. Like, you guys were interested in pushing some ideas forward, and this was something that you both liked to do, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, yep. So what happens after that, the rewards that happen after that were based on your own, they followed your own intrinsic motivation to do something, right? So what I'm talking about, first of all, like with childhood, with parenting, with schooling, we see people having these carrots dangled in front of them for things that they don't want to do.
Right.
And in the grown-up world, we see people dragging themselves into this beehive every day of, you know, cubicles and I hate my job and I'm here for the health insurance and just completely unsatisfied, miserable people. Now, it's not everybody, but this is also the problem with arguments that are based on effect or practicality. We can all tell different stories, right? This worked for me. This didn't work for so-and-so. And there's nothing really at stake in those kinds of conversations because there's all these escape hatches. There's all this subjectivity. There's always a way out. I have statistics this way. You have statistics this way. And it's at best win, lose, and probably ultimately like lose-lose because everyone just walks away. And it's, I'm not just talking about this discussion specifically, but any discussion like this where there's some contention on an issue. If it's only like, does this work or not, it's really not going anywhere. I mean, we've all had conversations that we tried to base on, does this work or does it not work? Is it healthcare or some economic issue? And they really never go anywhere because people just throw statistics at each other or anecdotes at each other. You know what I mean?
Mm.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So the second level, you guys have anything on my end here in the studio, anything to add on that before we move on?
Good.
All right. So the second level of this would be the moral argument. And now there's a lot at stake. And now things can get heated up and emotional very, very quickly, right? If we move on to a moral argument, because what the meta talk is, what the subtext of a moral argument is like, if you're doing these things, you're doing something wrong. Moral arguments might be effective if people are already on their way and already interested in doing the right things, but these can be incredibly contentious and explosive. And we had run through some practical arguments for and against incentive systems. And did you guys feel satisfied with that? Do you see, Mark, where I'm coming from, or do you want more on that?
Well, but practical?
Sure. Yeah.
You know, I guess I want to understand, Brett, you're probably, I mean, you're certainly very experienced in what you do, and there's something for me to learn from what you've got to say on this subject. I don't understand. And, you know, I don't, at this point, I tend to be quite skeptical because I think the world is full of incentives in different ways, and that teaching kids with incentives is simply a way to show them how the world works. But, you know, hopefully you've got a gotcha at the end of this where you're going to show me how it all works, because I don't get it.
Can I cut to the chase of what I think the problem is?
Absolutely.
Here, so there's a difference between real world incentives and artificial incentives that are completely disaligned from the real world incentives.
Yes.
Right. And that's what we talk about when, especially with regard to education and the corruption of providing artificial incentives to children that undermine their actual learning process.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And you guys understand this, especially when we talk about the so-called justice system, right? Where, you steal from somebody and then we throw you in a jail cell for 10 years. Right. Where's the connection between the reality of the consequences of your actions?
Doesn't seem very realistic to me.
No, it's not. And, you know, and it's where spanking comes in, too, right? You're like, oh, well, you did that wrong. Now you're going to get a spanking.
Yeah.
Like, that has nothing to do with real life, and it doesn't actually teach a child what they need to
know. Is that an argument for using spanking if a child has used violence on another child, then?
I don't think so,
because, again, that's not an actual consequence.
Well, I would say, too, that, like, what do you want to show the child, where you just live in a world where you're surrounded by violence? You hit somebody, I hit you, we all hit each other, and that's, like, how many wrongs make a right? So I would say absolutely not.
Just trying to clarify.
Yeah.
So in my household, I mean, I work on this every single day, making sure that every learning experience is as real as possible. So my daughter isn't always as kind to her little brother as she should be. And if she headbutts him, you know, that doesn't mean that I smack her or something like that. But it does mean that he's not going to play with her for a long time, and until she makes that situation right.
Do you do anything that you would even call punishment, Osborne?
No, I mean, I can't think of something that a child would possibly be punished for. Like we were talking earlier before the show, like Lysander, he throws his toothbrush in the toilet. Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, that's not his fault. That's my fault for letting him near the toilet with the toothbrush.
Yeah.
Right. That's my responsibility to keep him from throwing the toothbrush in the toilet.
I think that's an awesome story, and how he climbs up and eats the toothpaste. I think it was almost as good as the story Mark told when he blew a whistle in somebody's ear while they were sleeping when he was a kid in that same show. I laughed. Mark, I rewound that part twice and listened to it again because I laughed so loud.
He came right out of that bed and chased me into the bathroom. I locked the door. My mom was using the bathroom. I busted in, locked the door, and he couldn't get to me.
Why did you do it?
I guess I had seen it on, you know, I guess the best explanation I have is I'd seen it on Looney Tunes.
That is a reasonable explanation.
So, and they had given you the whistle, or you had found the whistle, I think?
Yeah, I mean, you know, whistle was a standard toy. I believe that this was actually a one of the, like a tall drink stirrer that they might have gotten from someplace with a whistle on the end of it.
Yeah, you had your whistle, your Acme Dynamite, and... just only guidance from Looney Tunes, I guess.
That's right.
That's funny. But yeah, I think you're right, Osborne, that like, what could you punish somebody that age for? Now, Jack Mark's son is a little bit older than Lysander, but you have a child, Osborne, who's about that age too, around 5 or 6, right?
Right.
Okay, so Mark, do you do anything?
Jack's 4.5.
Four and a half, as yep. A 4.5-year-old will probably tell you.
Yeah.
Do you do anything that you would consider punishment?
Yep, absolutely. We do timeouts. There's, you know, they may happen once a month. They're pretty much a rarity, but we do, you know, the naughty nanny? What is the super nanny, you know, system where we go by however many minutes in timeout as for their age. So 4 minutes.
And
so for example, what would he do that would warrant a timeout?
You know, as soon as you said that you didn't use punishments, I began to try to think of, you know, what was, you know, what's been happening and in those circumstances. And the one most recent, he was, you know, Laura and I were trying to have a conversation, and he was, you know, just, you know, he interrupts, right? The kids do that. And we told him to wait, please hold on. Daddy and mommy are talking, you know, that kind of thing. And having him wait, and he really just became unruly and, you know, like physically acting out and yelling and all those kind of things. So, you know, Jack, if you don't calm down, you're going to have to go in timeout. And it wasn't effective. So into timeout he went.
Now, when timeout happens, I mean, I guess it's a little bit different for everyone. And I heard one of my brothers say it once, and it's a difficult thing. It's a difficult subject to broach with somebody who has their own children and you don't have children. This is tough stuff.
It's a landmine. It's a minefield. Excuse me.
It really is. But what is timeout like? Do you think that somebody that age would see isolation as withholding affection, as affection being conditional upon behavior?
Affection is conditional upon behavior. I don't know if you're aware of this.
Well, I mean, for your own child, for somebody who's that young?
For everyone in this world. I mean, I hope that I make it clear with the hugs afterwards what's going on and explaining why he was there and, you know, what he can do in the future in order to not end up there. That, and, you know, asking him for a hug and not making him give me a kiss, though, that you know, that I hope that I'm under making it clear to him that, you know, the affection's still there. But I really do believe the world will withhold affection from you if you act out, talk during other people's conversations, throw things, and scream at the top of your lungs. I mean, like, suddenly your friends aren't going to like you anymore.
But let's describe, if you don't mind, the escalation of that for him when he starts trying to speak out and obviously have you and mom address some kind of need. Is it physical and tantrumish?
From the kid's got no needs. Let's try to use real world speak here. What Jack wants.
Well, what do you mean? You don't think a human being that age has needs?
Oh, he has no needs that are unmet.
Materially or any, no needs that are unmet?
You know, I mean, he gets, his mom and dad are home all day.
Right.
I mean, he doesn't have a need for affection in that area. He may have a need for, you know, playmates of his same age, but he gets those at school. You know, the fact is that we, as the id in this world, we want what we want when we want it.
Right.
And what Jack needs is to understand that he cannot get what he wants when he wants and how he wants mm-hmm. under his own terms.
I mean, yeah, that is something that everybody
very sensible
yes. needs to come to understand at some point in their life. But one of the questions that I learned to ask through my experience when I, the things that I did in education were behavior problem after behavior problem after behavior problem. All I did all day was put out fire.
I bet you had a bunch of them. And there's no doubt in my mind. And let's be clear, when Jack gets a timeout, it's a once a month situation. It's a pretty rare situation. And it's usually, you know, I mean, it's the equivalent of some other parent's spanking. I mean, it happens so rarely. Because he just doesn't need it.
It worked for me.
Okay.
I'm so glad you're
That's
here.
That's all I got, man.
I'm so glad you're here.
When you say it worked for me, Ian, you're talking about timeouts?
Timeouts, yeah.
Corey, you had a thought.
Well, yeah, it occurred to me, it's going to sound facetious, but the idea, I mean, generally the idea of timeouts is to teach some kind of compliance to a certain set of rules.
Sure.
And anyone who, you know, grows up to be liberty-oriented, non-compliant with quote-unquote authority, I think there is something that was not imparted about compliance in general.
Right. Are parents' requests always justified? Are they always realistic? Are they always rational? Are they ever driven purely by frustration or anger? To work for them is one thing. I think domination relationships always work for the person who is dominant.
Right.
But seldom work for the person who is subservient to that. So, Ian, if you want to tell us a little bit more what you mean by working for you, the timeouts.
Well, I mean, as far as, right, I mean, from my parents' perspective of getting behavior in line with what was expected without using violence, you know, that's what it worked right. for, I think. I know that I did not want to go sit in the corner. I did not want to be, you know, sent to my room. I, at some point, didn't mind being sent to my room because I had things in there I enjoyed doing, but eventually they took, you know, figured out they could take away the things I liked. So I remember one time they, you know, threatened to take away my Sega Genesis from me. And I was upset about that because I said that that I paid for that. You know, that you didn't give me that Sega Genesis. How can you take it from me? It's mine.
It's a good question.
And it was a good question. And they had a good answer, and that is they paid the power bill. So they were gonna take the AC adapter away.
Now, so, go ahead.
Yeah, they got me.
But what my goal is I would like to see people, even if it takes some time, move away from seeing parenting as a justifiable domination relationship, because everybody seems to think that that is justifiable today. And kids might not know words and phrases like double standards or hypocrisy, but or disappointment or powerlessness, but they certainly know what it feels like. And you know, one of the things that I worry about when we look at the common interest that we all have and the things that we're trying to change or we'd like to see change or evolve in the adult world, in these very formative years for children, when they accept these domination relationships and they internalize that and they say, I guess this is okay. Well, they're ready for school. They're ready to move beyond school to sit passively and surrender their minds to the agendas of intellectuals and academia and higher education. They're ready for the state, for sure, which is entirely a domination relationship. So in these most formative years, I think that the real change of, you know, a future of a voluntary society or liberty or however you want to define it is something that is only made possible if people understand that it is a long-term pursuit. Maybe it can happen faster now than other major social or morally focused revolutions in the past because of the technology we have today. But I really, really think it has to start with different attitudes about parenting. And the most important one is just how I sum up all of these incentives, disincentives, positive reinforcement, negative reinforcement, carrot and sticks, is that people accept it as a justifiable domination relationship. And I think that's the thing that we need to change.
Okay, so if I take that premise as true, and I'm not sure that I don't think that it's justifiable, I think that if it's my house, I get to, I can justify anything and under a non-aggression principle at that point. I don't think that it's necessarily expedient or the right way to raise a kid. So I might parse some words with you on that. But I have heard, from many people, and at this point, you, that maybe my way of parenting isn't perfect, and I'm willing to accept that. Please tell me what I do instead, because this is what I don't get. I don't get what else do you do?
Okay. Well, can I answer that by asking some questions? Because I think it's hard to just...
I don't think you can, but okay.
Well, first of all, I want everybody to know that Mark and I are acquaintances, but I've listened to him talk and gotten to know him through, his radio personality over the course of 5 years. I've never lost a wink of sleep over what he does with his child. I'm sure that he is a fantastic father. I've seen him with his son. I'm not worried about or even trying to pass judgment or talk in a prescriptive way about what you're doing with your son. What I am worried about is talking in a prescriptive way with people who are far less caring, far less compassionate, empathetic, and enlightened about, yes, punishment and rewards paradigm is okay. I think that's something that we need to move away from, but I'll ask you some questions, and this kind of gets into the third way of having this conversation. The only way that I think can ultimately be win-win. The first way was practicality, efficiency. We could debate that back and forth with statistics and anecdotes all day. The second way was the moral argument, to say something, even if we wanted to talk about spanking, like how is spanking not a violation of the non-aggression principle, especially when somebody can't even defend themselves?
Well, first off, I think that...
it's totally a violation.
I would agree that. And I'd say that changing a diaper is a violation of the non-aggression principle, that putting a child to sleep who does not wish to go to sleep is a violation of the non-aggression principle, to put a child in a car seat when they do not wish to go. I mean, we call that, if you were to take an adult, put them in the back of the car and tie them up, we would call that kidnapping. But when we do it with a child, hey, look, Jack, time to go, buddy. And I put him in there and click him in. It's not kidnapping. It's just parenting. So I say the parenting is a violation of the non-aggression principle, and that the parent-child relationship is one that is quite a conundrum when it comes to liberty-oriented people.
Sure. I agree with everything you just said, and that's why it's important to always be in a mindset that you understand that relationship and do everything in your power to alleviate those concerns. You know, if I'm going to the store with my daughter, like we talk about it, hours beforehand, and we plan it out so that there's not going to be a situation where I'm forcing her to get in the car and strapping her down. And, we negotiate, what she wants to get out of the experience and so forth.
So it's proactive, and you're trying to create a win-win situation.
Absolutely.
Right. Right.
Well, the conundrum arises when, especially when children are much younger than that, I can see where the problem is. It's like, how do you negotiate with a 2-year-old? You really can't. Not always.
My son is 2, and I don't have any problem reasoning with him. It doesn't work out easily.
Yeah.
I mean, for sure. Right. You're talking lots and lots of work to make this happen. Parenting is hard.
Yeah. Like, how do you stop a kid from throwing his toothbrush in the toilet? Well, there's going to be a period of years when they're younger that the way to stop them from doing it is to not hand them a toothbrush near an unguarded toilet.
Yeah. You have to be prepared to deal with the fact that you're going to have toothbrushes in the toilet.
Right.
I mean, it's going to happen.
One other thing and this is from my experience too, and I worked with kids, and like I said, they were older, but constant the types of predicaments you would run into with far younger kids. And I understood, as I did this year after year, the importance of setting things up ahead of time very carefully, proactively, saying that these are my expectations, this is what I need people to do here. Setting that up makes a big difference. So Mark had asked a question that we didn't have a chance to answer, and if we're in that part of this discussion if this doesn't work, what would work? And it's a very difficult question to answer, and it's different for every family, for every child. But for you, Mark, I have some questions that we can start with, and I'd be interested in your thoughts.
Okay. Maybe that can. This is really where what I think that the frustration comes down with when folks say that, you know, say spanking doesn't work, or you shouldn't spank, or you shouldn't use timeout, or you shouldn't prescribe these kind of things. And it's then the parents are left then what?
I think it's a fair question. And I think the important thing is beginning to consider the possibility that there might be another way. Because asking if I can't spank my kids, then what do I do? It's kind of like asking who would build the roads.
I get that. And I'm sure some parents can't imagine another way. Laura and I are constantly trying to think of other ways.
Right.
Looking at this child rearing thing as to some extent an experiment for our lives. I mean, this is an edification tool for ourselves.
Sure. I think the main question is, are you interested in brainwashing and programming your kid, or are you actually interested in them learning? And I think that's where this incentive question comes down to.
If we're only focused on effects, manipulation of behavior, which I believe punishments and rewards to be, are not going to have positive long-term outcomes. So we can use Mark as an example here for some of these questions. In your dealings with your son, Mark, when some kind of disciplinary action needs to be taken, or just in interactions in general, what is your intention? To be right? To get him to do what you want to do? Or is it more about connection and mutual understanding?
Well, I'd certainly like him to do what I'd like him to do of his own accord. I mean, isn't that what everybody wants in life, is for other people to do what they want them to do and to do it happily? Smile when you do what I want you to do. that's what I want from the id of me. But, sure, I want the situations that's going to allow us to live the best life together. We're going to be in the same house for quite some time. And, I want him to, love me and all the things that, that parents want. But at the same time, I'm pretty strongly of the opinion that one needs manners in order to function in society well. And that if one has those, that one can get so many things that one wants.
Do you want Jack to be, as far as motivation is concerned for his actions, do you want them to be extrinsic, based on if I do this, I get this, or if I don't do this, this bad thing happens to me? Or do you want, his actions ideally to be based on intrinsic motivators, more feelings and needs?
I don't know that I entirely understand the question. I mean, I want him to... Certainly. I mean, everybody, the right answer is intrinsic, but the real answer is that I make all kinds of choices based on extrinsic factors all day long. So I think the answer for me is I want him to, at the very least, understand what these extrinsic motivators are, and that there are extrinsic motivations. I mean, am I going to deliver my son up into his adulthood at 12 years old, or whatever age one decides that adulthood is? And I think 12 years old is pretty close.
Okay.
Am I going to deliver him with the inability to even understand extrinsic motivations?
Sure. So what are some examples? You say you deal with this all day long in your life. What do you mean?
If I go too fast in the car, somebody's going to give me a ticket. If I, don't behave the way, behave within certain means with my wife, she's going to leave. If I drink Diet Coke and have a caffeine overload, I'm going to say words and things that are going to make people not want to hang around me.
But your life, the fact that you interact with the people you interact with, the fact that you have a wife, it all came from your needs, your feelings that you wanted to get met, right? The fact that you go places, that you have a car, that you live in a house, that you have a job. I mean, those were all things that weren't like, well, geez, I better get started pleasing other people here. Those were all about your own intrinsic motivations that made your life in most of what it is possible.
I don't think I understand, Brent. I mean, I absolutely said to myself, if I want to have a good life, I need to serve other people. That's Zig Ziglar's shtick. Yeah. He says that if you want to have a good life, serve other people.
But what's in it for you? I mean, it's not self-sacrifice.
A good life.
You give people what they want, they give you what you want. That's always how I've lived my life.
Right. So that's a win-win situation.
Right.
Now, we get away from the practical, we get away from these moral judgments, you're bad if you do this kind of stuff, and we're getting more into, I hate to say it, guys, nonviolent communication, unconditional parenting stuff. And
I'm interested in these things. I just, Brent, I'm frustrated because I don't get them. I talk to some of the smartest people I know about some of these subjects, and I'm left going, I don't understand. I mean, I've listened to Wes Bertrand, at least some of his audio, and man, I just love the sound of the guy's voice, but I don't understand. Yeah. Well, I don't understand.
I think the problem with Mark is that he doesn't understand what we're talking about because he's not someone who treats his son like a jackass.
Right.
Right. So he doesn't get why we're saying what he's doing is wrong.
I'm not saying that at all.
We're not saying what he's doing is wrong.
I don't think that you are saying that. I think you're saying that there's different ways to go about doing this parenting thing, and that it might be better, and perhaps you can try it out. And I'm willing to do that. I just don't understand what you're saying.
Maybe my parents ultimately failed because I've got a real authority problem, and I don't like backing down when I'm told what to do now, and I get myself arrested for it.
But Mark, you were saying that you were having these conversations with peaceful parenting, unconditional parenting folks, and you felt like you were walking away generally unsatisfied?
Generally so. You know, I've listened to the Wes Bertrand's Complete Liberty podcast, and I don't listen to every one of them by any stretch of the imagination. I pop in, I pop out. I hear things like what you're saying tonight, there. I listen to School Sucks. I hear things like what you're saying tonight there at School Sucks. I've talked to Stephanie, my co-host on Sunday evenings on Free Talk Live, and you can find that at freetalklive.com. I always get these sort of, the way that people go about parenting today is bad, and using incentives is bad, and of course spanking is bad, and all these things. What I never hear is other ways to go about doing it, easily implementable ways to do those things. And it's frustrating.
Yeah, well, I think that's the problem, is it's not easy, right, to have relationships with people.
Yeah.
Right, especially ones who are in their formative times.
Right, because these aren't relationships. I mean, relationships go two ways, and I'm frankly, my child does not care what I think most of the time. Like, he cares what he thinks. He thinks it's a good idea to spray water out on the floor of the tub if I came in and say, Jack, my need for a dry floor isn't being met, and I have a deep concern that the drywall in the bottom layer of the house is going to fall in, and it's going to cost me thousands of dollars.
Jack doesn't understand mold.
He's going to turn the hose on me.
I don't know. I don't see that as a conversation that you can't have. I mean, like, I have those conversations with Lysander. He's 2.5 years old. And maybe he doesn't get every word that I'm saying to him, but it doesn't stop me from having the conversation with him, because at some point he's going to get it.
And Mark, I don't want to, I hope it's okay that I say this, but like, one of the things that I hear just a little bit is some resignation on your part. Like, I wouldn't even try. I wouldn't even bother to try and do something like that.
I'm going to walk in the bathroom and go, Jack, what the heck are you doing? Don't put that back. You can't spray water outside of the tub. And then I may explain to him, as I'm having him help me to clean up the mess, because that's what I always do. Although I always end up, seems like, cleaning up more than he does, because he's slower than I am. I'm going to try to explain to him what can happen, but I don't think he understands the consequences or necessarily even knows what drywall is.
Okay. So then what do you do?
Well, you know, I think the one thing that's happening there is that he is learning that he made a mess, and you should clean up your mess. And I think, you know, that's what he's learning in that case. He may not understand why that mess is a bad thing, why it might damage the walls or the floor or whatever, or somebody might slip and fall, but he does learn. And I think this is a good lesson for a child to learn. If you make a mess, you need to help clean it up.
Yeah. There's going to be destruction that occurs along this path. I mean, there's no way around it.
I gotcha. And there's going to be some yelling that goes along on the path too.
Sure.
I've heard him do it before. This situation's actually happened where he's taking the directional spout thing from the shower and spraying it on the floor of the bathroom. You know, I go in and Jack, and he goes, what? You know, he's just been spraying around the side of the tub and in different places, and now let's spray it over here.
Well, I want to go back to something that you said. Sorry, did you have something to say, Osborne, real quick? Or did I hear somebody go?
Yeah. Well, I think the situation you just described and your reaction to it, I think that's a reasonable reaction.
We've been talking for an hour and a half now, and I still haven't heard any disagreement that would cause you to disparage us on your show.
I didn't like feel like did. They were doing that. I didn't get why I sounded like Kermit the Frog. It was not a good impression of me at all. I don't sound this anything is, like that.
In fact, School Sucks podcast.
Yeah, during our pre-show, I tried to
the studio,
craft a Mark Edge impression that sounds nothing like him.
But, well, that turnabout is fair play, Brad.
What's that?
You got to get nasally to be Mark Edge impression.
No, no, because yours sounded nothing like me, so mine will be sort of,
hi, I'm Mark Edge. I'm a super genius.
It just sounds like a different Muppet.
It sounds nothing like you. Yeah, it does sound kind of like a Muppet, too. But
I'm Mark Edge. I'm a super dick.
No. I said super genius.
Super.
That's a thing that Mark Edge says. I'm a beautiful man. I'm a super genius. Those are things that he's known for saying.
By the way, did not say, hi, I'm Brad Vanoy. I just said, this was sort of random hippie A suggesting how to go about raising your child.
Sure. Now, there was kind of a dust up a while back when Ian suggested that, or asked the question, I don't know if he actually suggested this, that nonviolent communication was like a therapeutic cult. And Mark, you said something a minute ago, like, Jack, you're not meeting my need for having a dry floor, which is kind of caricaturing it in a way that I really don't think is fair. And I think
it's not intended to be fair.
Sure. Oh, okay. And I think when people first hear this, yeah, I mean, like, based on the way that we're used to interacting with people, the lose-lose, win-lose types of situations and the way we usually talk, especially if we're media producers and we have to talk in an engaging, confrontational, entertaining way like you guys do and we often do. Yeah, nonviolent communication sounds awkward. Corey, you said robotic. It sounds clunky. It's weird.
It sounds like a Mad Lib that you just take some standard sentences and you plug in the proper feelings.
But one of the aspects of a cult is an organization that'll have its own jargons. This is one aspect, and I didn't let Ian get away with calling the whole nonviolent communications thing a cult. If you recall, I jumped right in and turned that around. And I think I was pretty successful, but it does have that one aspect to it is what makes it sound culty is that it's jargony.
Okay, sure. Well, I mean, it's using words like feelings and needs a lot, which actually is what most of what we are doing in our lives is based on meeting. So, like, the questions I have for anybody who's like particularly right out of the gate dismissive of NVC: do you have emotional needs? The answer to that question for any person who is somewhat self-aware is yes. Is part of your time, question two, is part of your time spent trying to get those needs met in your daily operations? The answer to those questions is yes. Question three, then why not talk about it in a way that's mutually beneficial? And it goes to the same question is, what's your favorite type of outcome for an interaction? Win-lose, lose-lose, or win-win? So I think NVC is about expressing the things that's going on inside of all of us all the time, even if it is maybe a little awkward. And in fact, Wes and I were talking recently about better ways to do this. He pointed me to a couple books about what they call Street Giraffe or Street NVC, which is kind of taking some of that awkwardness out of the language and the Mad Libs thing that Corey described and the jargon, Mark, that you described. So I think that I originally said to Wes, look, I'm doing a show where I'm trying to entertain people and I need to be caustic and I need to be confrontational. And I know you guys do too a lot on your show. And I don't see how to fit this into the way I talk on the show, but I think this is something that's very, very useful in real life. And I really encourage people who are parents to look into it. Mark, you spoke to this right at the beginning of the show tonight. When people are attracted to some new idea and they first learn it and it's exciting, they really don't know how to share it with other people in an efficacious way.
Like the ideas of liberty, for instance.
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, I really struggled with that. Your show was one of the first shows that really cemented this stuff for me many years ago. And when I first tried to go out on my own and have these conversations, boy, they didn't always go well. Well, you know, they never really go well, depending on who you're talking to. I mean, obviously, once I started doing this show, it changed, but go ahead.
I think the groundwork is laid long before we tried to do these things. I mean, Rush, this comes to mind. Rush Limbaugh's got the Limbaugh letter, right? He's been sending out this little newspaper thing that he's been making for years. And, you know, it's his advertisement when he plays it on the show. And I assume that means he didn't sell the advertising avail. His advertisement's like, how to pwn liberals, read the Limbaugh letter. And the suggestion is that you're going to somehow argue someone out of their position and into your position, and that just doesn't work.
Well, I mean, unless we go about it, I think, this third way. Now, Rush Limbaugh is, I don't even know what you would call what he does, right? Because he's not making everything seems to be in politics, like the subtext, the meta talk is always like, I'm morally right and you're morally wrong. Right. But it's never outwardly stated because it seems to be more about, well, I think the traditional left-right conversations are people just given issues by whatever their media of choice is, whatever their confirmation bias media of choice, whether it's Fox News on the right or the New York Times on the left. And they just kind of parrot stuff at each other, and those discussions really go nowhere. But
copy and paste things onto their Facebook feed.
Yeah, but they're all just like, I was listening to the Bill Maher show, and it's just people throwing crap at each other.
People don't have discussions, generally speaking, from what I've been observing. And people are just really just waiting for their chance to talk so they can line up their next zinger.
But the interesting thing about Free Talk Live is that if you listen to these other talk radio shows, the Hannity's, the Rush Limbaugh, as Mark mentioned, or O'Reilly or whatever, if you disagree with them, you're finished. You're off the air. And you guys seem to give more time to people who are more confrontational.
And we get critiqued for not letting them get full thoughts out or whatever. And I suppose it's true. You tend to get ramped up when somebody else is ramped up. Oftentimes, I try so hard to be peaceful, because I think that you can really control the conversation when you're under control. But
right, like the other night where you were shouting like a madman and I was totally cool.
Go fuck yourself.
Oh my goodness, we're on the radio. Or no, we're not. Is it okay? Can we swear?
It's up to you. There's a station in Oklahoma City that has been taking some, like a pirate station, that has been taking some, an FM pirate station, that has been taking some of our
shows.
Sorry
to all the people listening on broadcast airwaves, because I know your ears are more sensitive than the people who listen on YouTube or their MP3 players and all those other things. So
he called one day, and I didn't know they were airing stuff from LRN.FM, but he said that they were, and he named some of the shows. I don't know if he mentioned your show, but then again, you weren't on the air at the time, so that might have been a factor. And it was several of our shows, the ones that air in the middle of the day throughout the refeed versions of them, and he was taking pretty much all of them, so for like 3 to 5. And I believe your show is one of those shows. So I think it was your show, it was included. But anyway, he said that he was driving down the road and heard Ladies and Keen cursing up a storm, and it made him cringe because he's been on the air for over a year and the FCC hasn't visited him, and he was kind of nervous about it. And so I said, I said to him, I'd talk to the shows, but I can't control ultimately what they do. So, if it happens every now and then, it's no big deal. If you make a point of it, it might upset someone like that. I don't care personally as the program director of LRN.FM. It's a pirate network. Pirate stations should have, the occasional curse word. I don't think that's a problem personally, but it's up to you.
So that clears that up. We've got just a couple minutes left here. So anyone, any closing thoughts?
Anything we can disagree on, for God's sake?
Let's see. Actually, I feel like we could.
Before we close this thing out, I just want to say one thing.
Okay.
And that my favorite words that I hear from my kids are, I refuse. It just warms my heart so much every time those words come out of their mouth. Because
you're raising,
I know,
little dissidents.
Yes, I know if they can say that to me at their age in these formative years, then how much more are they going to be able to say that to the state?
Just think, Osborne, they could grow up and be like me, where they get arrested at the town of Palmer offices, like I did today.
Yeah.
Refusing.
Good for them. They're not trading video games for BJs at 11.
I think if there was anything that we came close to disagreeing on, I think it's the notion that if we are going to present this peaceful parenting idea in lieu of the way people are generally doing it now, then the thing we do disagree on is that if we're going to present that, then we need to provide an alternative.
As is true with anything that we're presenting to anybody.
Exactly. Which is like when I present the idea of a stateless society to someone who doesn't already believe that, their first question is, well, then what are you going to replace it with?
Well, I think,
well, first of all, I don't see why you necessarily have to replace it with something in that case. But also, it's pointless to talk about what you would replace it with unless we already agree that it needs to go.
I think there's also a degree of humility involved in this as well. Like to say, well, geez, I don't know how this would be built because I'm not an engineer.
That's true.
If I wanted to pretend that I had every answer to every conceivable problem,
I would run for president.
Or, I would be a politician. So the ideas of liberty require some humility. And like, this isn't about central planning. So if you want me to talk to you like a politician, there's plenty of people who will already do that. This is about something different.
Right.
And I think that a lot of these conversations that people have about parenting, where it's like, well, this worked for me. Things might have worked in the 50s or the 80s, but we need to keep evolving in that respect, especially if we want the things we were just talking about, like a stateless society, a voluntary world, to be possible someday. I really believe, you know, the reason why I focused on people under 30 in this topic of school is because I really think that that's what needs to change. I have experience in education. I'm not a parent. I couldn't do a show about parenting, even though I think that that's probably more important, because after 5 or 6 years of, you know, a domination system in the home, school makes perfect sense. And after 15,000 hours of that, the status quo, the state, also will make perfect sense. So, you know, I think we need to work backwards and start with how children are raised and how children are treated. I want to say thank you to Mark and Ian from Free Talk Live, who have hung with us for the entire 2 hours tonight. I originally asked them on Facebook yesterday if they would mind, after doing 3 hours of their own show, doing two segments with us. So guys, thank you so much for sticking with us.
No problem.
Yeah, whatever.
And just in case somebody stumbled across this on Ustream, has no idea about Free Talk Live, can you just give us a website and when you're on and all
the particulars? You can go to freetalklive.com. We're on 7 nights a week from 7 to 10 at night Eastern Time. And, of course,
we're on 114 radio stations, 2 XM channels.
That's right. And live, of course, on live streaming as well. Archives, podcast, it's all there and it's all free.
And it's all thanks to Jason Osborne.
You know, Osborne's a huge part of it. I don't think we could do it without him.
Thanks, guys.
All right. Well, thank you so much for listening to our show. Thanks again to Mark and Ian. Corey Osborne, thanks for being here. We're going to take about a 5-minute break. Continue on Ustream only, where we do say the F word and other words.
We sure do.
And we encourage you to join us there if you've been listening on LRN. But also go to LRN.fm and check out all the great live programming and podcasts there as well. Give us 5 minutes. We'll be right back, and we'll take your calls at 843-JOIN-SSP. You can Skype in School Sucks Live. Thanks for listening to the regular show. Have a good night. Okay, this is just for the people who are watching us on chat.
Oh, boy. And time for fact or crap.
Let me unmute Mark and Ian, too, so they can play. I want to pick a good one.
All right.
So if you're on the chat watching the video, you can just type in fact or crap.
Hey, quick question. Are you using the LRN chat, or do you have your own thing?
I have my own thing.
Okay, gotcha.
So, but I do, that reminds me, I do want the embed code for the LRN chat at some point, too. If that's not too much trouble.
It's pretty easy. All you have to do is just do an iframe with chat.lrn.fm.
Oh, okay. Great. Yep. I want to put that on the new website.
Cool.
Are we ready for the first fact or crap?
Yeah, do
fact
it.
Or crap.
Nazi spies infiltrated New York and Florida during World War II.
Fact.
Osborne?
It seems perfectly reasonable that that would be fact.
See what people in the chat are saying.
You know, I've got to say that, Brett, I saw you do your little comedy bit at the Porcupine Freedom Festival.
Sure.
And you do the very best deadpan I've ever heard. So therefore, I'm going to decide that you're lying. And in fact, it was other states.
Okay.
Ah.
Are we ready for the answer?
That's a very detailed way of saying crap.
Everybody in the chat who responded says fact. Fact. Eight Booyah. Spies were dropped off by a German U-boat four near New York's Long Island, four south of Jacksonville, Florida. They immediately buried their uniforms in the sand and donned civilian clothing. However, they were soon betrayed by two of their own, George Datsch.
Oh, German pronunciation.
Mm-hmm. And you're gonna get phone calls.
Ernest Berger.
Der Berger.
Who lost their nerve after a run-in with the Coast Guard.
Mm. With the Coast Guard.
Always
some German spies they are.
Yeah.
Okay, so everyone who guessed...
You'd think Nazi spies hang. Are going to be tough.
Coast Guard sweated them out.
In the chat, it was 4-1 fact to crap. So good job, chat. We'll do another one during the next break.
We only get one?
Well, I'm always worried about these breaks when we talk over them.
They seem to sneak up on us. Yeah. The end of them, that is.
There is an island town in Iowa. There's another one. There's an island town in Iowa.
Hmm. Do they have any lakes in Iowa big enough?
That's a Mississippi River.
Hey. Is it?
I just closed it.
It moves around.
Way to go, Brad. The cedar or the snow. Hmm. That might be a fact. But now we'll never know because Brett closed the calendar and we don't know what day it was.
One in the chat, it's 1-3 so far.
I'm saying fact.
It sounds crazy enough to be a fact.
Yeah, we'll have to find out during the next break.
Ah, that'll keep them tuned in.
You guys better pay the tease and not forget about this.
I'm going to say fact according to Google.
Is Osborne sitting over there drinking?
No, yeah. He's on his phone.
All right.
I haven't seen Osborne drink since Porkfest 2010.
When he does, it's though.
I'm not supposed to be Googling these, though, right? Like, that's probably not.
That kind of takes the fun out of it. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I only did it because you lost the answer, like, so I figured I'd go and find it. It wasn't hard to find.
Ian is the Lance Armstrong of Factor Crap.
Yeah. Ian's blood doping. He got a hamburger dope.
You know, I have now won, speaking of Lance Armstrong, it's gratifying to know that I've now won exactly the same amount of Tours de France as he has.
All right, we're coming back. I'm muting everything. Hold on, guys. Corey, do you want to give us the answer for Iowa? Is there an island city in Iowa?
There is an island town in Iowa. It is a fact. Sabula, known as the Island City, is located in Jackson County, Iowa. It's a small town. Only 1 mile long and a quarter mile wide, and is almost completely surrounded by the Mississippi River, except where lakes border it on the west side. See, I knew there was a lake involved. The residents of Zabula, just about 700 total, come and go by boat or bridge.
How about that?
Fact.
You want to do one, Osborne?
Yes. Yes. Find a good one.
Do something to get Osborne to talk.
Oh, yes. Here's one I know the answer to.
Okay.
The movie Heidi interrupted the final crucial plays of a Super Bowl game. Fact or crap?
The movie Heidi. What is Heidi?
If he knows the answer, then it must be a fact.
Swiss girl named Heidi. Classic children's story. I would say that sounds like a fact. It sounds like a weird thing that somebody to make up.
It'd be even weirder if he said that he knew the answer to it. How would he know the answer if it wasn't true?
Oh, because this is a game where some of the things sound real and are made up, and some of the things sound ridiculous and are true.
Mm. So he's read the question before would be the other way that he would know?
He knows the answer.
Which suggests that it's a fact. Exactly. If it never happened, then he would like, oh, I know that never happened. I've seen every Super Bowl live.
So yes, Mark is right. You gave away
the Mark answer. Is... a super genius.
Yeah, you know who else is a super genius? Me, because genius. I just tricked the living shit out of you guys. Turns out it's crap. It is crap. Although Heidi did interrupt a regular season game one time between the Oakland Raiders and the New York Jets.
There you go.
Isn't that the opposite of what usually
awesome
happens?
At this game.
I recommend you check out Malarkey. Johnson brought it over to the Keene Activity Center recently, and it is a game all about bullshitting your opponents, and it's kind of in line with this, but it's
what kind
really
of incentives
fun.
Does this create, Brett? That's what I want to know. Telling lies to each other for fun.
Mark, you weren't kidding when you said you were a super genius. That's a question I have no answer to.
I'm just happy to leave you speechless.
Well, you know, my most important thing with this conversation was I really liked your story about that you gave as an example of incentives, and I wanted to try and broaden this a little bit to maybe talking about the best way to have these types of conversations that I think are usually go nowhere. Osborne, do you think this one? How can we get this one to go somewhere, Osborne? What do you think?
I don't know. Your show, man.
Well, I think the most important thing to having this conversation go anywhere is make sure we are using the same definition for words like we talked about earlier.
All right, we're coming back. Hold on, everyone. Okay, hi, everybody, and welcome back to... let me unmute everybody. Welcome back to Fact or Crap. Corey?
You know...
Did we settle the Iowa one?
Yeah, we did.
Okay.
I read it. All right, here's an easy one, just to warm us up. Some highly intelligent chimpanzees have been trained to speak a few words of English. A few words of English. Those are chimpanzees.
Let me go to the chat.
I think that's got to be true, right? There's got to be some words that a chimp mouth can make, right? And they can be trained to do a lot of different things on command, right? Like, you know, type right. words on a computer or something. So they yeah. have to also be able to make a particular sound with their mouth on command as well.
Yeah, articulation couldn't be that big of a deal. There was a gorilla that had that could speak sign language and had
right.
several hundred word vocabulary. I can't
lots
imagine
of chimps. You can't get a lots of chimps have been taught sign language too.
So is it fact or crap?
It's crap. It is not possible for chimpanzees to speak English or any other human language because their vocal cords and throats are very different from ours. Some have learned to use their hands to speak in American Sign Language, and some have been trained to use specially designed computer keyboards. Hmm. So it's amazing. Not a matter of they can't learn words and what words mean. They just physically cannot speak the way we do.
Man.
Oh, how about
that
this
sounds
one?
Like a challenge. I'm going to get a chimp.
Yeah. How about this?
I can't wait to see Osborne with a baby chimp hanging around his neck.
I bet Osborne is going to know the answer to this one.
And a little silver glove.
Oh, if you're just joining us, I just started a recording. I forgot to record the first segment of the second hour. So this is, that's okay. I got it. No, I got it for the podcast.
Oh, good.
It's fine. We just don't have video of it. Okay. This is something we do during our commercial breaks now called Fact or Crap to entertain you, the YouTube audience. So, Corey, you got another one?
Fact or Crap, France was the first country to make a full-length feature film. I am going to go with fact. I'm going to guess that's a fact.
I always thought that D.W. Griffiths was the first person who directed a feature-length film.
It's possibly that's true.
Wasn't it Intolerance, or what's the other one, Birth of a Nation?
Birth of a Nation, maybe. But I'm going to go with, it might have been Georges Méliès in France.
Yeah, maybe some of those French, no, French, what was it called? It's not idealism. It was German, what was the German one?
Francocentrism, is that what you're talking about?
No, the German's filmmaking style, like Fritz Lang, and what was that, German expressionism?
Yeah,
okay. Mm-hmm. The French had their own, but maybe... Go ahead, Corey.
Turns out it's crap, and it's not the country you think it is. Australia led the way to longer movies worldwide with The Story of the Kelly Gang in 1906, a movie about a famous Australian bushranger, which is an outlaw living in the Australian bush, not what it sounds like, named Ned Kelly. You may have heard of him. Clocking in at just over an hour.
What did you think a bush ranger was?
Like an official, like a park ranger, but for the bush.
That's what it sounded like to me.
Yeah, but it turns out, no, it's an outlaw living in the Australian bush. And when I think ranger, I usually think of somebody who's some kind of authority over a wild area.
I gotcha.
That's what I was thinking. So, yeah, The Story of the Kelly Gang, 1906, about Ned Kelly, who has had other movies made about
him. I like
him.
Bush Ranger. You know how sometimes like people say, hey, sport, or governor?
Yeah. Governor. Hey, people do say that all the time.
I'm going to do Bush Ranger.
How's it hanging, Bush Ranger? I like it.
I like it, too.
We're
like
taking it back.
Name of a porn.
Yes, it does.
I was doing dishes today. Ranger. I was doing dishes today, and I picked up a spoon that had peanut butter on it, and I go, dirty peanut butter spoon. And I said, that's the name of some kind of sexual thing.
Yeah, we need to come up with a definition of that and put it on Urban Dictionary.
All right.
Next to Brazilian meat lunch.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to School Sucks Live. This is Brett. And with me in the studio tonight, if Corey and Osborne on the phone, Ian and Mark. I mean, do you guys want to hang with us for one more?
We're going to have to.
All right.
We're not resolved here.
Right back on School Sucks Live with Mark and Ian. Wife.
He's asleep.
Hold on. It'll be hard to find anything to disagree on. Yeah, it's going. Yeah. Okay. Corey, fact or crap?
Okay. Fact or crap? Cliff Bar Incorporated was started by a disgruntled Power Bar executive.
Oh, I want to say crap. All right.
Yeah, I'm going to have to say crap, too. Cliff bars are nothing but candy bars.
Hold on one second. Let's just see what
What are power bars?
They're a little better than a candy bar.
A little better.
Sarah says crap. She's right. The only one who's responded so far.
I know that power bars are crap.
Oh, while we're on the break here, I couldn't bring this up in the show, but one of the Ustreamers say, Mark, I've just got a picture of you guys. I made a little still graphic, a picture I found just by doing a Google image search.
Just
for
tell
Free
him
Talk
I'm
Live.
The good looking one.
Says, Mark and Ian look so young in that picture.
It's probably the
it was taken yesterday. School. It's black and white.
Oh man, yeah, that's old school. Yeah.
You're both about 7 years old. It's an old timey photo. It's a tintype, actually.
And I think that my neck is photoshopped in it. It got rid of the pelican neck.
What's pelican neck? Like a long, skinny one?
No, it's just kind of like loose. There's a little flesh. Droopy there. Drooping. Like a second, working on a second chin, trying to grow a second chin.
So Carrie hasn't got you guys to go get new promo shots done?
Well, she has almost scared Ian enough to get it done.
Oh, okay.
Actually, she shot down my idea, and she hasn't come up with as far as posing and what the ways we'll go about doing it. She shot it down and she hasn't come up with anything else. So.
If it ain't broke, don't fix it.
Oh, God.
We're supposed to be a young talk show. Makes us look younger.
All right. So, Cliff Bars?
Somebody says crap, and Sarah, yeah. I think, one of our listeners.
Well, Osborne says crap. Who else? Somebody else said crap.
Power bars are crap. Oh, that's true. I don't know if the statement is crap.
All right. So anyway, it is crap. Cliff Bar Incorporated was founded by a disgruntled energy bar consumer who was unhappy with the quality and texture of what he had been eating. When he couldn't,
the texture certainly is better.
Yeah. What he says, when he couldn't bring himself to eat his last energy bar after a 175-mile bike ride, Gary Erickson decided to come up with something better. So his mother helped him bake a bar that they thought would be tastier.
Coming
it's
back.
It's certainly tasty.
That guy always tricks me. We're not coming back. What's that guy's story? Zeus?
Zeus.
He's pretty awesome.
Dog Live. Yep. No, I can't do it.
I recorded a whole promo in that voice one time.
Mm. What, this voice?
Yep.
Zeus. In a world. They can't hear it.
Oh.
Who can't hear it?
Sorry, I'm playing a video here.
Oh, sorry.
Just uploaded my arrest video.
Oh, well, I'm glad you got out.
Yeah, it's good to be out.
In an expedient way.
It certainly was expedient for the government. It took all day, but I did get out without having to spend the night in jail.
After show, we'll let Mark and Ian go, but we'll do another hour or so on School Sucks. project.com/live. We'll be right back. Might as well do the last one, right, guys?
You know, I'm sitting here, I'm embarrassed. I got my business partner. We've had the same damn music beds for nearly a decade now. Your guys' music beds are so much better.
Do you guys record when you do use live stream? Are you recording your show? Or are you just streaming?
I think the live stream is always recording. But I don't know.
I'm serious. I'll come out there and I'll with my setup and I'll film your show one night and put it on YouTube. I think that would be a great thing for you guys to have.
What the hell would anybody want to watch a 2-hour free talk live for?
I don't know.
I'm telling you, people. There are people because
creepers.
If people,
what the fuck? You've got to be kidding me.
When you turn on the television in the morning, there's all those talk shows on the television. They broadcast.
We don't even look at the camera.
Imus in the morning, and I don't know who else.
The other thing. This is something good that your old pal, I don't know if he was ever your pal, the Red Bar guy does on his show.
He
streams his whole show and records it. And if you're like a Barmy member, a subscriber, you can watch the whole show on their premium content section. But for every show, he cuts up like 3 or 4 minutes of something that's really funny and just puts it on YouTube as a promo.
That's a good idea.
Yeah.
I got no time for that.
Yeah. You won't see. You need someone who can do that for you. Which is not me, but I would do it once. So,
yeah, well, you find somebody that's willing to do it at a price and we'll talk.
We got a cool guy who runs the Free Talk Live YouTube channel that is kind of cutting things out and making his own stuff, and he's doing a good job.
Yeah, that's,
I'll just let him do it.
That's good. I'm glad
nobody looks at it.
What are you talking about?
It doesn't get that many views.
Well, so a lot of channels in the Liberty Movement don't get a lot of views.
We need more views.
I can't do anything on YouTube. I mean, I posted, I had one video that had 100,000 views, and all the other ones have like 6,000, 5,000. Then everything after that is like 200.
Yeah, that's more what we're talking about. We might even be in the dozens on some of these things.
Yeah, I mean, I think it would be good to have like highlights, but it is it's the most time consuming thing I've ever done with this show.
Here's what I think we should do on Free Talk Live is we should have Brett Vinoy on more often. Drive traffic.
Vinoy or Vinot?
Whatever. God, annoying French names.
You talk like a Muppet. You can't say your name.
I'm happy to come out there anytime. I would love to do it. Never gotten well, to
you
do
don't
it.
Need a you don't need a damn invitation.
We're starting the Free Street Project. Pete and Clyde bought the house across the street.
Christ, Ian's trying to sell real estate now.
Osborne, the house across the other house across the street.
Osborne does not want to live here. He had the opportunity to move here. He likes it in
it's
Manchester.
Never too late.
You
never too
only
late.
Moved here because of Russell Canning and he's gone. Give it up.
You guys should all move to Osborne's neighborhood.
That one house that I saw in Keene, the taxes on that were $30,000 a year.
Woo!
Wow.
Yeah, Osborne lives in a nice house. It's new.
Yeah, so everyone should move to Osborne's neighborhood. Buy $500,000 house. Free neighborhood project.
That's not free. $500,000
to live that close to each other.
Yeah, I know. Osborne has a nice neighborhood, though.
Yeah. One of these people on this street is going to go off and firebomb this house at some point. So
we've been egged before.
All right. We're back. Hold on.
What's up next?